be. Like, why not? Why not building something that I can have people to glow, more people, basically. So when I share the vision, I don't think, you know, the people that I know, they even, like, calculated, oh, it's going to be profitable and what. Like, they just, like, I got lucky. They just like me. So, like, let's do it. Okay, I will help you.
Wow. You want a podcast? Great. So you have some audio on your website that nobody goes to.
You're listening to Vandaltron's Curious World Podcast. Check it out, baby.
Hello. Bring it in. Bring it in. Bring it in. We have a very special episode. My guest today is Clara Yu. Now, Clara has been a VP of design of such brands that you probably heard of, Cole Haan, Calvin Klein. I almost said Calvin Klein. That's how much of a fashion illiterate I am. Michael Kors. Big names. Even a dum-dum like me knows who those are. Clara has recently left the prestige of working for those companies to embark on her own journey. And this journey has led her to create her own company called Cala Vela. You know, again, if you're really into fashion, which I know some of you are, this is a great episode for you. Because not only we talk about fashion, we talk about entrepreneurship. But if you're kind of a fashion dum-dum like me, who just knows about pants and pockets, it's also of value because we really get into, you know, determination and listening to your not only your head but your heart, and really making your own path and finding out what's really important to you. It's a lot of good stuff. Clara is brilliant. She's artistic, so driven. But you probably already knew that. Here's what you probably didn't know. She's very funny, and she's super, super sweet. So I really enjoyed this conversation. I know you will too. Without further delay, the Vandaltron Curious World Podcast episode with Clara Yu starts right now.
Well, don't you tell me to smile. You stick around and make it what you want. Never be on what you can tell. Maybe speak
on the soul. So, why don't you start trying telling me the story about the hamburger again?
No. So when I went to one of the gallery openings, I saw the hamburger, and I was like, oh my god, that is so awesome. I want to have it for my apartment. But then
try to get as close, yeah, a little closer.
I see. And then, but I forgot about it. And but when I went to Milan for trend like shows, and then they were showing how the food is like so trend. So I was like, oh my god. And then they showed the same hamburger. That's how I was like, I have to track the same gallery and then get the hamburger. So that's why how I got the golden hamburger.
Is that kind of typical how you get influenced? Like you're just kind of walking and I'm kind of observing your environment?
Yeah, like I always describe myself, I have very good eyes to see the details, but I think my really strength is finding something that what we see all the time, like mundane things, what we see all the time, but putting them into completely different contexts, like just like a golden hamburger. Yeah, so that's kind of how I always find inspiration.
Can you give me an example of like other than golden hamburgers?
Yeah, totally. So one of my, because I wanted to be a sculptor actually. So
oh.
I did not like really think like I'm going to be like fashion, but love those 3D, like putting 3Ds, you know, like you draw something and then putting them into 3D. And I thought, wow, this is so amazing and joyful. It's like a lot of like, you have to think about different math, like 1 millimeter, that's so important to putting these two things together. So there's some parts of like math I really liked about it, but it's very artful. So I love the sculptor. So one day, so I applied this like gap design competition. It was like a summertime when I was going Parsons. And that summer, all my friends were at the beach hanging out. But because I won the gap design competition, one of the things was you have to work at Banana Republic, which is an amazing thing. But all I wanted that summer was just laying at the beach and hang out with my friends. So that summer, I was like, you know, kind of being alone in city, right? My friends there were at the beach and working at Banana Republic design team. And I started seeing this standpipe everywhere in New York City. Do you know what standpipe is?
Is it like a big pipe?
So So whenever I say
hooray for me.
So whenever I tell Americans, hey, look, the standpipe is everywhere, and they go, you're speaking wrong English. Like you're probably talking about like fire hydrant. But I'm like, no, it says standpipe. Even sometimes it says do not sit on. So I found beauty in that.
All right. So let's clarify what exactly is a standpipe.
Yeah. So standpipe is when you walk around in New York City, that's the pipe sticking out from buildings. It's for purpose of the fire hydrant connecting together.
Right.
Yeah. So that's...
It looks like if you wanted to sit, it would be a little awkward, but it could be like a seat.
Yeah.
Sometimes they put little spikes on there.
Yes, right. So it says standpipe. So I decided to make a collection out of it. So what I did was, you asked me like, what are the things, I'm giving you examples. So I went to Home Depot and went to the section that has radiator screens, because I thought radiator screen comes in so many different shapes, and I thought that was really beautiful. So I got the sheet of like many different sheets of radiator screen and used that as decoration of a handbag. And also the handles were actually the water hose, rubber, like water hose, but made it very, very like beautifully. And I went to kind of rubber store because it was all about, you know, how that we find the mundane materials of putting them into completely different context and make a beautiful thing. Basically like giving different life to these, our mundane things. One of the collections that I did was went to kind of rubber store. And I was so fascinated by, oh my God, how come you got to sell fire hose? And then the owner said, inside the fire hose, there's rubber in it. I was like, oh, interesting. So I said, can I buy some? And he's like looking at me like, who is this girl? Like, want to buy fire hose and always come here buying all different parts. So I got...
She's either crazy or she goes to Parsons.
Yeah, true. So I got those fire hose and cut in half and it made beautiful handbags. So that's kind of one of the examples I can give to you.
Wow. So it's interesting that you said that you initially started considering being a sculptor.
Mm-hmm.
That almost, it seems like the point of view of like a postmodern kind of artist, you know, that I would, you know, somebody who has kind of the mindset of like kind of being in the MoMA.
Mm-mm.
How did you make that transition to fashion?
So, being in Parsons, it was amazing because I actually, like, as you were saying, like I love Bauhaus, their concept and design. It's a German, design house. How basically all the product design, like, you know, we use a spoon, but it's a functional thing, but we can actually make it that beautiful. So that's like a whole origin of the Bauhaus. Parsons was following the Bauhaus program exactly. So when I went to Parsons, you get to do many different things like two-dimensional design, three-dimensional design, like basically a lot of different fine arts programs, basically like you do. And then while I was going Parsons, so I met that time my boyfriend, who was a fine arts student. He's from Texas. So one summer, it was actually Christmas time. So I was out in Texas with him. It's called Ganado, super small town. And it's like, I'd never been to like that small town in my life. So all we did was, because he's a fine arts student and, you know, I was like deciding like what to do, but I want to be a sculptor. So Obi did at his parents' garage making art. And I was like, I need to show this to people. Like, I cannot just keep, you know, building things. But I know, so the other part I noticed about myself, I want to tell the stories. And I need to tell stories to more people through the product. So I had like that like conflict and desire at the same time. So that's what I realized. Actually, I can tell different stories. It doesn't need to be just one. I can tell different stories. And every season, I can show these to more people. And I can tell stories throughout entire year, different stories. So that's how I decided, you know what, maybe I want to try. Maybe it can be like handbagged. So I sketched up some handbags, and because at that time Parsons did not have handbags and accessories program. It was all garment. So one of the professors actually really loved the sketch that I did, sketches, like collections, whatever. So she submitted to one of the fashion, the book. It's called the Bina's Fashion Sketchbook. It's kind of like guidebook of fashion, how to illustrate things. And then Michael Kors, that time Michael Kors is pretty small, but Michael Kors, they saw the book of my work and reached out to me. Hey, would you like to have, like, you know, being intern with us? I was like, maybe I will try. So
now I'm going to the beach.
So went there, and that's when I learned, wow, it's every millimeter matters, every detail matters. You can tell different stories, and you can actually create collections, which means you have the stories underneath stories of that collections. You can build so many different things. And I just loved it. How two-dimensional to become three-dimensional in every part. And then also it's a functional thing. It's the most functional thing the woman needs. So like kind of like how always my brain like works, it just like suits perfectly. So that's why that transition happened.
And so for Michael Kors, I know I'm kind of jumping ahead, but I mean, you became pretty very successful in a short span of time. Yeah, like, how did that happen?
I mean, I'm pretty ambitious, but actually the other thing is I always tell people, if you're so passionate something, but you also know what you love the most, and also if you know like what your strengths are and weaknesses are, I think you can pretty much find ways. So I knew like what I love. I knew that what brings joy to me the most. So I think that was like key, just like loving so much what I do. And I think that was the first step of kind of how I got to where I'm at today. And so, you know, what I did was I also wanted to test myself out too. Is it really my path? Because I also had a completely different degree. It's another story. I had a completely different degree. So
what was your degree?
French, but don't even ask me.
Because I would have never guessed that.
It was like people trying to then speak French to me. I was like, oh, well, anything that I know, it's, you know, I don't understand. I can understand French a little bit. That's the only thing I can say in French. So I have a completely different degree. So like, you know, I studied later than other people. So I wanted to test myself out too. Is this really my path? Like, am I just really going, you know, right direction? So there was one other design competition. It's very, very big in America. So it was CFDA. So I submitted my work, and I won the first place of that CFDA competition. And that kind of
put me... And that was bags?
Yeah, it's all handbags, yeah. And also it was kind of similar concept, using of something very untraditional materials, but making it like so beautifully put together, but no one would know where the material is coming from, even though that was like mundane materials that we see it every day. So that kind of put me in a different place. So industry started calling me before even I graduated Parsons.
Wow. And so what are some places that you've worked? I can't remember. They're pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. So, I mean, quite many places. But you know, the fire hydrant, you know, standpipe collection. So that actually won another competition called the Independent Handbag Designers Award competition. So they held the ceremony, and then one guy came to me and said, I really like your bag. And I said, thank you. And I was showing like how it works and with that functionality. And he gave me his business card and said, you should come and see me. And that was the CEO of Henri Bendel. So, so I worked, I went to Henri Bendel, did not think what that was for. He was saying like, hey, we're building out Henri Bendel private label. I want to do that with you together. So, so I was working Henri Bendel, but while I was working there, there's just other companies like I was kind of like interested in working to, because I wanted to learn how the big accessories or handbag companies work. Because Henri Bendel is an amazing company, but it's a department store building private label for handbags. So I wanted to work at kind of core like handbag company, handbags and shoes. So one of the companies reached out to me was Cole Haan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I decided to go Cole Haan, and that's where I really excelled as a designer. Learned the entire process of design, started traveling to factories. So I was going to Asia 3-4 times a year. So Cole Haan about Cole Haan. And after that, the Henri Bendel CEO asked me to come back work with him. But it's all same company, people don't know. Henri Bendel, Victoria's Secret, Bath & Body Works, it's all under the same company. So he asked me to do heading up Victoria's Secret International Division. And I was like, I don't even wear Victoria's Secret. Like, what are you talking about? But what he said was, hey, it's a $9 billion company. For the first time going international, you're not going to do lingerie. And I was like, what? That's crazy. So we will do beauty and accessories, and I want you to heading up entire design of it.
Designing what?
Beauty product and entire.
Oh, so you're kind of stepping out of your kind of your niche of.
No, the beauty and accessories both. So accessories means even luggage, scarf, handbags, cosmetic cases, so anything. So I launched about 13 categories. So we were opening up so many stores all over the world. So I thought like my life is amazing because I take the private jets everywhere.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I know just saying that, just yeah. Like in the span of a few minutes,
yeah.
I know, you know, people listening were like, oh my God, what did she's like the Michael Jordan of fashion. Everything's just so easy. But I imagine it's not easy. I imagine even though you had talent yeah. there, what you alluded to, there must have been an incredible amount of hours dedicated to putting in that work to be better.
Yeah, definitely. And I think of what, like, just somebody called me, like, you're like a unicorn in fashion. And I was like, that's interesting. It's a good thing or a bad thing? I'm very interested in, like, so my family background, they're very academic. So my sister, she's an attorney, and like we have just a lot of like the academic background. So I, you know, grew up that, and so I love like business side of it. So not many creative people has the mindset or interested in learning about business side of it. But for me, it was always fascinating for me, like, because you're basically building product to deliver this to people. Then how would you deliver it? So I think always understanding design before designing something, understanding like business need first, and then what consumers need. And I think that really helped me to put me in the different places. So yeah, I studied a lot, business. So my bookcases are filled with all the, yeah.
And now you have your own company.
Yeah.
What was that transition like? What gave you the idea to say, to kind of take that leap and become your own CEO in your own business?
So after Victoria's Secret, Cole Haan, when they were looking at history of Cole Haan best-selling seasons, the years, that was the time I was leading design. So Nike sold Cole Haan to another company, and the CEO asked me to come back to Cole Haan. Did not even think of my age and, you know, my background coming here when I did not know anybody. So they gave me a vice president position of design and merchandising.
All these jobs are in New York, or?
It's all in New York, yeah. And then that integrated under to Global Brands Group. So, but before that happened, so after I left Victoria's Secret, like I was really, really having this desire of being a good leader. Because I felt like, you know, in fashion, there's a lot of feminine and like amazing people, but I wanted to be like good leader. So I felt like I mastered it when I went back to Kohan under Global Brands Group. I was managing about 20 people, and every year, you know, the business grew. And then in the end, I was managing about 20 plus different brands. So how it
happened? Wait, 20 different brands, but yeah. How many staff people?
About 20.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, like I learned what my strengths are, and what I realized was working with, I mean, any brand you could name it, I've worked with all of them, doing their handbags or accessories designs for them. So when I was doing all that, I realized, hey, I'm so good at finding DNA of each brand and then pull that DNA out and build the product to the best story out of it. So when I had that experience, I was looking around and looking at all the brands. There's no brand actually stand behind the joy. You know, certain brands, they sell provocative. Certain brands, they sell like grungy, or a certain brand, they sell a place to side, like the lifestyle or Hampton's lifestyle. So I said, what if I create something, what do I want to sell? I want to sell joy. So that really came to my mind that, hey, I feel like I've kind of got to a place that I think I can be a really good leader. You know, I kind of mastered it being here like 3.5 years. And I had a very good team. So once I'd done that, like what's next? I felt like everything was equipped to me. And then I was like, I want to create the brand that delivers joy. So that was what motivated me.
So what was that leap like? Here you are, you're executive mm-hmm. vice president. Going on private jets and going all over the world, and all these people are answering to you. What made you decide, or what was it like to make that decision to say, to walk away from that and put your name and your mm-hmm. face out there?
You know, I didn't really think so much about it. I really just like...
Sorry to put the pressure on
yeah,
you now.
I know. I didn't think of much about it, because what happened was, okay, where do I feel most joy? I feel most joy in ocean, and also when was the most like the moment of joyful moment that I had? Oh yeah, it was when I was in Hawaii for the first time learning how to surf early in the morning, and I loved it so much I went back there early in the morning and I saw these gigantic sunrises over the ocean. That like that visual, that memory, that was the most joyful thing. I want to deliver this to people. So that was purely like my thought, did not even have business plans or like lined up all this and that. So I, so like that's kind of how it started. And so, and also I traveled a month to Sydney and Australia, like Australia and New Zealand, like being nature, and especially for when I was in Sydney, walking that coastal walk by myself and thinking, you know what, this is so beautiful. Like, how can I tell this story throughout the product? So I took that time, about a month traveling, and I know you will laugh. Basically, from that point, so that was August. I launched my brand in December. So it took only like 3 months
for me. Quite the walk.
Yeah, so it took 3 months to build a brand. So everyone said, that's impossible. You cannot build a brand. Something doesn't exist in 3 months.
What is the typical timeline? Just like a year or two years?
Yeah, a year. Yeah. So, but because, you know, like I knew people that I also always knew these people I want to work with. And you know, manufacturing side and, you know, sourcing side. So I reached out to them, hey, this is my vision that I want to deliver joy. So basically creating the product using all this luxury quality, but making a very accessible price point.
So what was that reaction when you put it out there and said, I want to create something, you know, with the baseline of joy? Were they like click? Like, what are you talking about? Are you crazy?
But, you know, they know me. They always say, you're so joyful. And I think that also helped me too when I said, hey, this brand is going to stand behind the joy and glow. But in order for me to do that, this is what we're going to do. Basically, like high quality, like what you only see in a luxury product at, but, you know, delivering that in very accessible price point so everyone can access to this, you know, handbag. Because, you know, even the handbag's name, it's Sunrise bag. Sunrise that glows over everybody. Like, why not? Why not building something that I can have with people to glow? More people, basically. So when I shared that vision, I don't think, you know, the people that I know, they even like calculated, oh, it's going to be profitable and what. Like, they just, like, I got lucky. They just like me. So, like, let's do it. Okay, I will help you.
Wow.
Yeah.
So where are we now with the business, with the brand?
And... Yeah. So launched on December and we did lovely, the launch party in the local Williamsburg Hoxton Hotel. It was very successful. And also I felt like, wow, there's like so much love and great feedbacks and all that. And in less than 2 months, Refinery 29, they chose Sunrise bag as like spring staple piece. It's a week to weekend approved piece, so you have to buy it. So if they put it on the cover, so that was like really, really good. And I feel like, oh my God, like something that I created to deliver this joy and people feel it. I never said anywhere that, oh, they carry the joy, like, but people feel the joy. So I felt like, oh yeah, like I'm accomplishing my goal. So right now I'm planning many different pop-ups throughout the New York City. And one of the bags is the smaller bag that, because I was thinking like, you know, what if I want to access to everybody, but then, you know, even this luxury pieces, like luxury market, when you look at it, like giving you an example, like Burberry plaid, even kids wear it, the mom wear it, grandma wears it because it's like luxury.
Mm-hmm.
But I was looking at the price point that I'm targeting, but it is, you know, all the goods that, I mean, all the pieces that I'm using, it's what luxury houses are using because I'm using the same people. So then I was looking at, I can actually do the same thing. So even the little kids can wear it. Because it's actually real gold, the hardware. It's 18 karat plated gold. So it would never change. Even the kids grow up, mom can wear it. You know, they become mom and they can wear it. So it's like just quality never change. So one of the pop-ups that actually I'm doing, it's next Sunday. We're doing spring bloom pop-up in Bergen. 12:30 to 3:30, there will be a lot of flowers in there, but actually there's really, I'm like so proud of it. Like, I'm so excited. So we will actually have a kids to come to mom and kids to come. And inside there will be big table with kids can actually decorate with dry flowers on the bag, but not actual bag, like, but paper bag. So kind of providing the experience to kids to hang out with mom, but mom can also shop there too. So... Or if moms really like it, they can do like mommy and me like bags too. So that's one of pop-up planning. So there's like a bunch of like those pop-ups that I'm planning right now.
Is the goal to get into brick and mortar, or do you think it makes more sense to just be on like an online presence?
So I, you know, I get the question a lot because brick and mortar is actually, you know, kind of like dying business, right? I took off a lot of margin in order to bring the bag in this price point. Normally the bag, the cost, you know, like, you know, what other brands would do is like a $450 to $500 bag, but we are selling it as $285. So that means my friend, artisan friend in all over the world, they took off their margin and I took off my margin. So that means if I get into brick and mortar, it will be purely for presence to assess to more customers. But I'm open to it because I want to have people to feel it and see it, be amazed by the quality, be amazed by the product. I'm open to it.
But yeah, but I mean, to your point, mm-hmm. I mean, the commerce is changing so often. I mean, I know, like, for instance, if I see something that I need, if I think of something that I need, or if I see something like it's advertised, I'm like, I'm curious of like, oh, well, I may want that or I may need that. I mean, I just go on Amazon and I do like a price comparison from there. Mm. And if I want it, I just click it. I think mm-hmm. most people, you know, kind of do that. And a lot of commerce is just kind of run online. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's kind of like where everything is headed. And if it makes sense economically, why not? Right.
Yeah.
So you talked a little bit before about being a leader. Mm-hmm. So how do you think you've changed since as being a leader from when you were kind of, you know, kind of the maestro with all these moving parts to, you know, now you are your own business?
It is hard because, you know, I think the biggest part is, I like to tell this when other people ask me like, hey, what is the most challenging thing? Like having your own business right now in this stage, because it's kind of baby stage right now. Having quality people working under me. I think that I miss the most because I have to wear so many different hats, but I know if I have like these team, I know they can just do it in a day, but because I'm doing, it just takes a longer time. But I think every day just being mindset of, I think leaders, it's all about mindset. And so, yeah, like it's just the mindset of like, I learned a lot from how to take care of yourself, basically. So like,
what do you mean by that? Cause that's, I mean, something that is kind of a reoccurring theme on this show of just being mindful of time, being mindful of workflow. So what did you mean by that?
Kind of having my own schedule. So when I trained, I guess I got trained, not I trained for myself. So having so many different brands, so many people that you have to manage my calendar, I even have to put like 5-minute blocked if I just want to have a coffee break. Because if I don't block that time, everyone just trying to, you know, have a meeting. So that, you know, kind of calendar management. So I have my own routine that I never would try not to break. Wake up very early morning. And
I know.
Yeah, we saw it in some way. Yeah, wake up early in the morning and start my day with, you know, like BBC World News and know what's happening. And then just Wall Street Money Market and Wall Street Journal, like just listening to all these things, like, and just like got it. And go to my workout. And that's how I start my day. And just like managing your calendar, I think that's kind of, I think, being leader of myself. Yeah.
You mentioned about having good people with you, the talent. What about the way you communicate? How has that changed?
Right now, you know, working with very junior people because, you know, it's baby steps. So
you have to protect your overhead, right? Mm-hmm. So you get like entry level type people.
Yeah. So that's challenging. Cause I originally assumed they will know things, but now I know I should not assume anything. So, kind of showing more examples and being a little more patient at the same time. If I have to do it, I just have to do it. Yeah.
So what do you look for when you are, let's say, somebody that you're looking to hire or looking to collaborate with? What are some things that you're looking for?
Graphic designers.
In terms of the qualities of the person.
Never give up. Like I get quite like I get very impatient when somebody don't even try and tell me, oh, that didn't work. And I get very frustrated because I know if you try, there's always answer. So even that, like, that never changed. So even when I was leading this many designers, you know, I give them like, hey, this is kind of idea and concept. There you meet so many different people. Like some of them think through and then kind of think outside the box as well. But some people just bring a few sketches and that's it. But you already know, you know, who's going to succeed as, you know, as a designer. So, yeah, like, so somebody never gives up and just try. And it's okay to fail. Like I always tell people, mistakes only have you to grow. Mm-hmm. It's totally okay not to make mistakes. I mean, it's totally okay to, like, you know, you make mistakes. Not, don't try to be perfectionist. I'm kind of perfectionist, but, you know, that all comes from a lot of mistakes. So
one of the things that we kind of brushed upon is, like, this kind of accelerated rate that you had of all the success. Were there some mistakes that you had that you learned from? No, you're perfect.
No, there were a lot of mistakes. One of mistakes, I'm just trying to think what that could be. I think I wouldn't say it's a mistake because I think mistakes always led into, I have to really think about it. What was the mistake that I made? No, I guess like I can share this one. So having worked at this Victoria's Secret, it was amazing. And other people from outside, they all said, oh my God, like business is doing really well and getting prizes from the company and, you know, going everywhere. It's like youngest director, whatever. So I had to be in Milan many like days for like building out the stores and things like that. And I just had to like break down a little bit because why am I doing this? So just a long story short,
it wasn't fun or the pressure or
no kind like, of long story short. So I would just make it like kind of short. So my mom came down and to see me to Milan from Korea and we had a wonderful time together. And we went to Rome and traveled, but she asked me before she went back at the airport, are you happy? And I broke down. I was so not happy.
Why?
Because I think that's the mistake that I'm going to share. You focusing on what, you know, not your internal goal. Focusing on what other, you know, company gives your goal. Like you have to make like 4 million in this year. And you just like work, you're smart and you just figure out that you make the number and then next. So when I was doing all that, I think I felt really, really empty. And the reason I started doing this was, okay, I want to tell the beautiful stories throughout more people. I want to deliver joy to people. But then that kind of my internal goal was overlooked by the company goal. So I think that was my big mistake that, you know, I kind of forgot why I was doing what I do. So, so that became kind of me.
So what happened with the conversation with mom?
I came back and resigned.
Wow.
Yeah.
So wait a minute. So your mom asked you, are you happy? You started to break down and then what did you tell her?
No, I mean, she knew. She didn't even need to. That's why she asked me. Like, everyone else always thought, you know, like, it's amazing. Like, she always travels. She always do this. She right. always that. But, you know, really internally, I was like, I was so not joyful. And then how can I then build joyful product to people? So I knew that it was not it anymore.
That's interesting because that would be, that was my kind of my reaction, you know, when you were kind of briefly talking about the things that you did. And I'm thinking all this success kind of consecutively and experiencing a lifestyle that I can only imagine. So my immediate reaction is the same. It's like, this person must have been like living the high life, must have been so happy. But it's interesting, and some of the things that, you know, that I explore in my own life and on this show is we are constantly tied to outcomes, and mm-hmm. sometimes those outcomes are not our own. So what if you get those outcomes, right? So it sounds like you were getting a lot of success. What if you get them? Then what do you do, right? Mm-hmm. So then you get more, and then mm-hmm. you do more and more and more. Because the thing about failure is that we can kind of sit with our failure and we can kind of like, oh my God, okay, what did I do wrong? I'm going to keep trying. And so there's that puzzle that we can solve. But if we succeed and we're feeling empty, mm-hmm. then where do we go? Mm-hmm. And so it's an interesting paradigm. Mm-hmm. But I think I think we all need to be careful of the things that we strive for and the outcomes that we try to reach. You know, it's okay to kind of take a pause and say, like you said, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. Does this make sense? Is this something you even want to do?
Yeah. 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 So that's what I made the mistake. I feel like kind of lost the purpose of why I was doing it.
What would you tell that version of yourself before the Milan trip? What would you say?
Like, what do you mean? Like,
if you were to have a conversation yeah. with that version of yourself.
I mean, I think I knew that it was kind of empty. You know, I think I was kind of knew that I was empty, that I had two suitcases always packed. Like one was ready to go to Ohio because Columbus, Ohio, that's the headquarters. And the one luggage.
Oh, that's kind of a weird headquarters.
Yeah. And the one luggage that's like, you know, go to Teterboro, get on the jet and go somewhere whenever it needs to be.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was that like? To have, cause that sounds like a life of a mobster, like always have to be ready.
Yeah, kind of. But, you know, I thought this is just life experience. It's amazing. And trying to make the best out of it, what's the surface. But I knew that, you know, I haven't seen my friends. Mm-hmm. I kind of lost my community. And, like, I miss, like, my people. So I had that, and then, you know, sometimes I haven't even been to my friend's birthday parties or, you know, like their life move on. But yeah, so I think I was very empty, and I would just tell myself, be honest to yourself and be brave. And it's okay to get out of boat.
Get out of the boat?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get out of the boat now?
This is kind of like, yeah, I feel like I jumped out of boat. Because, you know, you feel it's safe being in this big boat, mm-hmm. right? But you're not fully in control sometimes in the boat. But it feels safer because you don't see there might be bigger boat that you can hop on. So, yeah. So I think for right now, I actually thought a lot about it. Hey, can I asking myself, am I ready? Am I ready? Can I swim in the ocean? Like, what if the big boat doesn't come mm-hmm. to pick me up right away? How long can I do this? So, but after me going through all these questions, I gotta try. I'm not gonna sink.
What answered that question for you other than the pursuit of joy? I mean, mm-hmm. Was it a financial assessment? Was it kind of like just checking in with like your kind of your mental state? I mean, what were some things that you kind of just said? What were the questions that you had to answer for yourself to make that leap off the boat you were on?
I think it's really like a couple of things. Of course, like there's a financial plan had to happen because will I get investors? Will I get this? No. I want to try for myself. So definitely financially related planned for a certain period of time. Like, okay, if it doesn't work out this period of time, I can move on. I can do something else. So approach of the things that I decided to jump out of boat was, it was, let's think lightly. And so all those plans that I had, I'm not going to do, if let's say it didn't work out, I'm going to be sad. There's going to be financial loss, but it is okay. There will be something else. So it's kind of that mindset, I would say. And also just having having faith, like, yeah, having more faith that it's going to be okay. Kind of that, like, I don't know if I answered you.
No, that's good. But was there ever a voice in your head that said that you had to kind of push out to say, look, I'm not listening to that voice. I'm going to listen to the voice that says it's going to be okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think beginning when I started, I mean, it was so awesome. Like, but I could not go to sleep because I was nervous. I was worried building this. I mean, of course, you know, think about it. I say, like, kind of jokingly, like, yeah, I built it in 3 months. That 3 months was very hard. I don't even know. Like, every night I'm sleeping, but I'm not sleeping because I'm thinking about business, thinking about even stupid Instagram posts. Even, like, you know, like, everything was just in me, that the birth of this Calavera. And yeah, so that 3 months was really, really hard. Yeah, I don't know where I was going with this, but.
So Calavera is the name of your company. Mm-hmm. How did you come up with that name?
It's a twist of a Hawaiian word. As I mentioned, I want to share this glorious moment that I had. So Kala meaning is the sun. Vela means heat. So it's the heat of the sun. Hmm. So all the color palette and everything that's coming from related to, there's actually red color that all sold out. That was amazing after launched. So that the red color, the name is sun, and the yellow bag, that's a feature, the Refiner 29, that's sunshine. So it's really taking what we overlook in our nature, like putting that in just kind of appreciation of, hey, like, you can carry this sunshine everywhere.
All season.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the bags are small, but do they come in different sizes or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it comes with two different sizes. So, and then the way I was thinking at it, I've thought about, like, you know, big bag first and you have to fit computers and et cetera, everything. But then I was thinking, like, you know, no, I want to create the one thing that can do many different things. So I have to come up with the perfect size for that. The inspiration was this, watching people surf with that one surfboard, you can ride many different waves. Mm. And that really inspired me. And I decided I will come up with the one perfect size bag that you can wear many different waves throughout your changing day. So the bag has a lot of internal functions. It's triple zip compartment, but you can wear the backpack, crossbody, shoulder bag, belt bag. It's that perfect size. So if you need to go out at night to fine dining, you can wear the top handle or crossbody. Or if you go to street, you know, street, whatever, like fairs and everything, you can wear the backpack and hands-free or belt bag. So that's kind of like, hey, this one bag, ride different waves.
In your career, have you ever been into like an airport or a restaurant or something and you've seen somebody with something that you've designed?
Yeah, of course.
What was that like?
I actually have Instagram to separately hashtag like the fashion page, my fashion build. So whenever I see people all over the world, I snapshot because it's so, I mean, people are like, how do you like, you know, see that? But you worked on every stitches. So even I, like, one bag that was like, oh, this 0.8 millimeter, the white cream stitch, that's my baby. This is, you know, even like tiny, this D-ring hardware, you know, that's your baby even far away. So yeah, then I'm like, okay, I'm going to like little snapshot. So yeah, all over the world. I feel very, very happy to see them.
How important is attention to detail for you?
Very important. Yeah.
Do you carry that over with your life beyond design?
Maybe a little too much.
How?
I mean, you can see my apartment.
Everything is in its right place. I don't think it's anything overabundant.
So one of the example is when I say, like, I don't know, it's like pay attention to detail or what. like kind of color coordination. So having this orange popping up here, then orange popping over there. So kind of like your eye flows, but that's like a little details that I care.
Oh, yeah. Right. That makes sense. So you talked about some of the influence that you have kind of just walking and absorbing the, mm-hmm. the city. Where are you projecting that your influences and your creativity, where do you want to channel that forward?
My creativity channel forward.
Where are you looking to get more influences from?
Oh, I see. I think it's to life. Like, you know, I think a lot, I have a very good visual memory. I'm terrible at remembering people's name, but if they write their name down and if I see it, I remember. So for me, it's so I have a lot of good visual memories. So that helped me a lot, because even taking a plane, going somewhere, I'm looking at this, you know, plane. I happen to sit right next to the wing area. Looking at the wing, like looking at this small bolt and then the paneling on the wing of the airplane. I'm looking at it. That's so beautiful. So things like that around me that people may not see it, but it's there. And I remember that. And then I start to like research. Yeah, that was just so beautiful. And then you go back there and they start to, you know, build something. Yeah.
There's this stigma of somebody who's into design and fashion that they're kind of, they have a specific view of the way things should be. Do you have any kind of pet peeves about design or fashion?
That's where I think I was very different from anybody else regarding design world.
If you're in the airport and you see people with like Uggs or like weird like tropical fruits on their shirts or whatever, you're like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Like you know, each brand has their, I mean, of course, there's like different way of telling the story. But each brand, they all have a different DNA. Not every DNA can be same. So what I'm trying to say is everyone's aesthetic should not be same. Like, you're different. You wear this awesome t-shirt. That's who you are. And I think that's cool. So bringing your DNA throughout, you know, your look, I think that's expression of freedom of who you are.
So the key is to be open.
Yeah. Like try like new things and, you know, I think, yeah.
Great. So I talked about like where you would, the kind of like the conversation you would have about, you know, that person who was getting, you know, who was in Milan. What about if we go forward? Like, where do you see your, like, what's the path like for you? What lies ahead?
It's funny that I actually think that a lot. Like, I look forward. Because, you know, I think you being a designer, you also have a very good imagination. You imagine things. You see things, you can imagine how it's going to look like. So I think that's the danger of me, because I always think about, yeah, like what it's going to be. So even if you saw all the bags that was delivered to my apartment, it was an accident. It was shocked. I came back that night, piled the boxes outside, and I was like, what happened? And it was not even big box. The factory accidentally packed individual 100 boxes of the bag to send.
Where are they supposed to go?
To warehouse, and then it's all delivered to my apartment. And then there was a mistake on something, so I had to swap the rings inside of it. So I lined up the bags on my floor, and I'm so overwhelmed. And it was like 10 p.m. probably. I called my assistant, hey, I'm so sorry, but are you happen to be free?
You want to go through 100 bags with me?
So, and then because I was opening the half of the boxes and looking at the floor and like sitting down and like the boxes everywhere, the bags, and like lined, start to getting lined up. And I looking at it, I was like thinking, I'm going to take this photo. I'm going to show it to my granddaughter. This is how your grandma built a business. So never complain.
What was your assistant's reaction when they showed up?
No, like... she as you sent the photo, she's like, I'm coming. So we opened like bottle of rosé and then working through, and then she had to come back the next day.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was a prep for the lounge. So for the lounge, we had to hold those bags. Yeah. So that was fun.
How do you deal with stress in situations like that? Do you just, the rosé helps?
I mean, sometimes, you know, I have to say, like, you know, having company running alone is really challenging. You know, it's a lot of work and it's a lot of challenges. And I think, especially being a woman, running a business alone, I think that's also kind of other people's somewhat expectation of not taking it very seriously. Oh, yeah, like try. But I was thinking, if I were a guy, you know, would mm-hmm. they treat this the same way? You know, other men in the street, like, oh, I will help you. But would they do that? Yeah, so I think it's as, you know, women.
What about now, do you notice the difference between when you communicate with other females or with other males? Is there a difference?
Yes, definitely.
Mm. How?
Female, they take a little more seriously of what I'm trying to do. Mm. Well, I think male, yeah, try, but you can go back to companies.
You mean the males? The males give you like a pat on the head.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's like, but try. But, you know, you can always get a great job.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Hmm. So get you out on this. So we talked a lot about inspiration and things like that. You know, we went in the past, we went into the future. What about right now? Like, I want to know, like, what is happiness to you right now?
Happiness is when someone ordered a bag from online and I get this little ring. I was like, oh my God, somebody ordered a bag. So
they call you directly?
Oh, it's a website.
Oh, know, right,
they,
right,
yeah,
right,
but it's connected to my email. So I get like this ring. I was like, oh my God, somebody actually buying it. So that's where happiness comes from these days.
Right, because that's a piece of you, right? You didn't just design it. That's a piece of you.
Yeah.
Where can people find you?
It's brand name, Kalavela NY. So kalavelany.com. So they can Google it, Kalavela, Kalavela. Yeah.
And do you want to give out the hashtag or the Instagram?
Yeah, it's Instagram the same, Kalavelany, Kalavela NY. You will see beautiful ocean nature pictures and some influencers in there too. So yeah, and hashtag, as I mentioned, you know, like notion about writing one bag, one board, you write them in different waves. So the hashtag is Ride the Kalavela.
Great, and I'll put all that in the feed so people won't fall off their treadmill or whatever. Clara, thank you so much for doing this.
No, thank you. Really, really fun. Thank you.
Sweet listeners, as I always say, you're part of this conversation too. You're just on the quiet side. Bodhisattva, go out and do good in the world. Thanks. Bye.
Llego a puesto, voy para Mayarín. Entonces